Well, again, I'm not as deep an expert on that as I am on vaccines.
Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them.
We want to thank you for turning folks in and making sure we are all safe.
For the world at large, normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population.
That ability not only to isolate cases, but to rapidly detect illness in the context and remove those contacts should they become sick, was a central part of that. And as he said, that wasn't, they're using apps now to do that, they're testing apps, but that they didn't do it with apps in Singapore. They did that with community workers, with public health workers, visiting the houses, checking on people, checking their health status every day and saying, how are you? Have you got a fever? Have you got a cough? And if a contact has developed a cough or a fever, they were taken immediately for testing. So yes, we need the information technology tools. They help. They are not the solution. There is, right now, we don't have an alternative to what we would have considered in the old days boot leather epidemiology. Public health practitioners, doctors, nurses, community workers, working with communities to detect cases at community level. And the most likely person to become a case is someone who's been a significant contact of another case. And at the moment, in most parts of the world, due to lockdown, most of the transmission that's actually happening in many countries now is happening in the household, at family level. In some senses, transmission has been taken off the streets and pushed back into family units. Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them.
Motivated by vocal outcries from politicians and military officials, FDR signed Executive Order 9066, empowering the U.S. Army to designate areas from which any or all persons may be excluded. He later formed the War Relocation Authority to establish 10 permanent camps, housing nearly 120,000 Japanese Americans, mostly from the Western United States. Two-thirds of those interned were native-born American citizens. With only 6 days to dispose of their possessions, residents were forced to sell their belongings and even their homes for small sums of money. Internment camps were often situated in isolated deserts, prone to harsh weather, and surrounded by barbed wire and guard towers.
Everywhere she goes, Oh Young Hao-yu is followed. What she buys, how she behaves, is tracked and scored to show how responsible and trustworthy she is. It's called the social credit system, and in one version now being tested, a person's reputation is scored on a scale of 350 to 950. And Hao-yu, with a good score of 752, is okay with it. In fact, most people are.
It's a mechanism like pushes you to become a better citizen.
It's big data meets big brother, expanding how the government monitors, understands, and ultimately controls its 1.4 billion citizens. Thanks to advances in artificial intelligence and facial recognition, and a web of more than 200 million surveillance cameras.
Are people bothered by privacy concerns?
We think a lot of cameras keep the safety is really good. We can accept it.
Companies are experimenting with the algorithms to help the government create the new national social credit system. The government also has pilot projects. In one, citizens are required to do hours of unpaid work to get benefits. And scores are docked for things like littering, a messy yard, gossip, even jaywalking. Video of offenders is shown on the local news. And information collectors like Zhou Aini are paid to report on their neighbors. Her quota, 10 entries a month. Like the man who carried a drunk person home. A good deed, she says. Good social credit gets rewarded with perks like cheap loans and travel deals. But a bad score means public shame and worse.
Need to make sure that everybody continues to let us know where those folks are. If you've observed recurring violations of the Safer at Home order, please continue to let us know at coronavirus.lacity.org/business-violation. You know the old expression about snitches? Well, in this case, snitches get rewards. We want to thank you for turning folks in and making sure we are all safe.
Amazon isn't just delivering packages these days. It's also selling a powerful new facial recognition software.
Introducing Amazon Recognition Video, the easy-to-use API for deep learning-based analysis to detect, track, and analyze people and objects in video.
It boasts that the technology can detect, track, and analyze people. Let's think about what those powers could mean in the hands of the government.
Amazon Recognition Video uses the visual, what, temporal, when, and motion from the video to deliver high-quality person tracking and detection of activities like running, playing soccer, or getting into a car.
Recognition can identify a person's face in real time by matching it against huge databases of photos. Amazon also advertises this person tracking feature. That means that whoever has the software could theoretically use it to identify people at protests or figure out when you're traveling to the doctor or to a religious service.
The next, of course, common use case, as you could expect, is public safety.
Amazon is already working with government agencies to deploy this technology. At the ACLU, we obtained records that show that Amazon signed a secrecy agreement with one county to keep details about the technology out of public view. They've also invited law enforcement to suggest new features, and they offered free consulting to help the City of Orlando build its own system.
City of Orlando is a launch partner of ours. It's a smart city. They have cameras all over the city. We analyze the video in real time, search against the collection of faces that they have.
So Orlando is already using the technology. It also already has surveillance cameras all over the city, on everything from light posts to police officers. Activating a citywide facial recognition system could be as easy as flipping a switch. Body cams were designed to keep officers accountable to the public. But facial recognition turns these devices into surveillance machines. This can mean round-the-clock surveillance whenever cops are present. Imagine what that would mean for minority communities that are already over-policed. People should be free to walk down the street without the government watching them. In the hands of governments, technologies like recognition could make that impossible.
But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice. People don't feel like going to the stadium when they might get infected. You know, it's not the government who's saying, okay, just ignore this disease. And, you know, people are deeply affected by seeing these deaths, by knowing they could be part of the transmission chain. And, you know, old people, their parents, their grandparents could be affected by this. And so you don't get to say, ignore what's going on here. There will be the ability, particularly in rich countries, to open up if things are done well over the next few months. But for the world at large, normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population. And
an apparent new world order numbering of the world's population is in the works, which will affect and impact every human being on the planet from the first day of birth forward. This is a schematic of the game plan. It's called ID 2020 Alliance and is the most comprehensive surveillance database probably to date. As you can see from the international organizations involved, governmental agencies feeding it, statistical data, and the countries that would fund it. If you look closely, you'll see the importance vaccinations will play in the alliance, and the apparent role that Big Pharma will take in providing ever-increasing numbers of vaccines, which probably will never see legitimate scientific testing for safety or efficacy. The other point that should strike you when viewing the schematic is the apparent close relationship between GAVI, Gavi, and the United Nations UNICEF. The ID 2020 Alliance describes how and when it was launched. Gavi was officially launched at the World Economic Forum in 2000, at a time when multiple organizations were pursuing siloed approaches to immunization, leading to inefficiencies and ineffectiveness in the market for vaccines. The organization's founding partners, including UNICEF, the World Bank, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, developing and donor governments, and others, recognized that uncoordinated programs and unpredictable financing were hindering vaccination efforts and hypothesized that streamlining funding was a critical driver of a coordinated approach. As such, the Alliance not only coordinates action on the ground, but achieves scale and impact by operating as a multi-stakeholder partnership around a single funding entity. The Alliance raises a single fund to support global immunization efforts, then channels that funding into vaccination programs meeting criteria determined by Alliance partners. The result has been coordinated programs, efficient use of funding, and a large pooled market for vaccines that has driven down the cost of vaccinations for more than 800 million children worldwide. That description brings to mind Bill Gates' infamous statement made during his February 2010 TED Talk, when he gave his famous equation for global population control, which definitely included the use of vaccines. He stated, "The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Folks, if you haven't realized it yet, the digitalization and technological pushes can and probably will make life unbearable. Acceptance of all that technology that everyone thinks is so fantastic has now become the albatross around everyone's neck. You no longer will be your own person. You'll be owned by technology. So, what happens if you don't want to comply with all the toxic vaccinations? Well, remember that in 2016, the CDC exercised a hugely anti-constitutional mandate that everyone be quarantined or jailed without legal representation for not taking vaccines, and even fined up to $500,000.
Hello, this is Nicholson1968. Thank you for watching this video. I wanted to make it to connect a lot of dots for you of the bigger picture, the 40,000 foot view from above. The next clip, I'm going to be playing a clip from TED Talks, Dakota Gruner. She is the executive director of ID 2020. And listen how they try to sell this. As you listen to it, you will notice that it is trying to be sold as we want to get programs out to everybody on the face of the earth. We want to give everybody a bank account, digital ID, global citizen. Notice that that is a very prominent word you're going to start hearing a lot. Global citizenship of everything, not just narrowed down to one nation, one government. It's all global, moving that way and making sure that they track every movement with an ID, 2020, everything, every transaction, moving, selling it to you as a good thing. Just like years ago, GMO food was sold as a great thing. GMO food was sold to us that it would modify it so that it would have preservatives, would last longer, move it over long distances without it going bad, and we could do and eliminate hunger. Guess what? We still have hunger abound all over the world. Kids starving. Only thing that GMO food has done is cause cancer in humanity. So I'm gonna play this clip for you, then I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna connect some more dots for you.
I flew here from New York City. And to get here, I calculate that I had to show some form of identification 25 times. To board an airplane, to enter Morocco, to check into my hotel, and so on. Fortunately for me, when I was born in California, about 30 years ago, my parents registered my birth in the vital record system of Alameda County. And as a result, I have a birth certificate, a passport, a driver's license, a bank account, credit cards, and a health insurance card. And each one of those documents was useful in some way to get me into this room today. Each one of these documents demonstrates that I am who I say I am. You all probably have a similar portfolio of documents. But imagine that those documents were stolen, lost, destroyed, or disowned by the issuing authority. Or imagine that the issuing authority, a country, a state, a government agency, itself disappeared. And what if you'd never had a birth certificate, a passport, a national ID card, a driver's license? Nothing to prove that you are you. What would you do? For more than 1 billion people, this is their situation every day. Let me repeat that. 1 billion of our fellow global citizens are unable to prove their identity because they lack any recognized ID. That's 1/7 of the world's population. That means that 1 in 7 people have no way of proving who they are outside of their local communities. In effect, they are invisible. Now, the ability to prove who you are with certainty and in a manner that's recognized and trusted by institutions and by governments is a fundamental prerequisite to accessing even the most basic services. If you can't prove who you are, you have limited access to healthcare, to education, to other social programs. Your ability to move across borders, to vote, to enroll in school, to access a bank account is limited or non-existent. What's more, women and children are at a greater risk of being victims of human trafficking. So whatever is your most urgent concern, refugees, economic inequality, human trafficking, financial inclusion, universal health care, global education, I could go on. Whatever it is, you care about identity. Indeed, the UN estimates that 10 of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals cannot be met without first closing the identity gap. Even more fundamentally, identity is a human right. Article 6 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights reads, "Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law." Let me stress that. Everyone, everywhere. Here's the rub. With opportunity comes danger. Digital identity systems have to be thoughtfully designed and carefully implemented. If not, they can be more dangerous than no identity at all. And there are two distinct and equally important risks that I want to flag today. First, there's the risk of misuse. There's also the risk of missed use. At the most basic, there's the risk of exclusion as these systems become more and more embedded in our daily lives. If somebody doesn't have a way of proving who they are, as more and more services require that proof of identity, there's a greater and greater risk that they're cut off from the services that they need. Leaving people behind, that's an instance of missed use. And we already have examples of just how dangerous this can be. For example, the Aadhaar program is now estimated to cover 88% of India's 1.3 billion citizens. As Aadhaar was rolled out, there were reports of people starving because they were unable to get the food subsidies they had previously claimed. What happened? Proof of identity was made a requirement for this food program. So people who didn't register or couldn't register for the ID system were suddenly unable to claim their food benefits. And they starved. That's a tragedy. It's a tragedy of missed use.
So here we go. Said it right there, plain as day. If you don't get on board with this, what's coming, you will be left behind. Whether it be food, money, whatever it may be, you will be left behind if you do not participate in this new digital era, digital ID 2020, and other things that are coming that are in the works. You're going to be left behind. Perfect example, this was announced April 6 by a company, NetSense, that you need to know about. NetSense is a disruptive cryptocurrency payment technology company. They specialize in digital currency. NetSense jumped into action as soon as it learned of the plans that the United States Congress made to legislate for the U.S. Federal Reserve digital currency as part of two different versions of the COVID-19 stimulus bill. Ultimately, this aspect of the legislation wasn't included in the final version, but the board and the advisors of NetSense have agreed that this digital dollar will be included in subsequent legislation. So it's coming. Then that's how they roll. That's how they do things. They roll stuff out, they put it in the stimulus package, they sit back, see how they respond, and then if it's not going to go through, they pull it back. And then they roll it out later for another time. That's exactly what Google is about. That's exactly what social media is about, is looking at the algorithms of how we react to certain things before they roll things out and see how far they can go. So that is, they are working also with the central banks of all over around the world on the central bank digital currency, which is the CBDC. You can look all this up. And that is the whole purpose of understanding how central banks work. They're not part of any government of any of the countries that are in. In our country, in the United States, it is called the Federal Reserve Bank. It is no more federal than Federal Express. It is made up of bankers all across the world. Nobody knows exactly who all they are. We know that Rothschild's involved. We know Rockefellers are involved. They've never been audited. We've tried. They've all gotten shot down. Tried it when Greenspan was in. Tried it with Bernanke when he was in. There has never been audited since it's been put into place, and for good reason. So the central banks are working on digital currency because they're going to do away with all of the currencies all over the world and have one form of currency, one form of money. And then you have this other, which I just showed you the clip of, ID 2020, digital vaccines, digital tracking. It's all being put into place. And I've said it before, it's like making a peanut butter sandwich. Why do a lot of people don't believe in conspiracies? Because it's compartmentalized. Some people are working on the peanut butter, some people are working on the jelly, and some people are working on the bread, but they're not connecting the dots. Only the people at the top looking down connect the dots of what they're building. They're building a peanut butter jelly sandwich. They're building a new world order. One world for money, one world for government, and one world for religion. Look at what happened to the Pope. He just removed he is no longer known as the Vicar of Christ. He is not using that title anymore. In order to bring in the new, you have to get rid of the old. Old to the new. So you have things changing right before our eyes. The monetary systems all over the world are collapsing on purpose to bring in eventually new ways of doing money, commerce, those kinds of things. So be paying attention, connect all the dots. And so when I say connect the dots, I'm telling you, you better use your spiritual eyes, your spiritual discernment. If you don't believe in that, you're going to never see the bigger picture. Spiritual discernment is going to help you through these times. Regardless of how you feel about it, the enemy of this world and of this realm, that's what they believe. Every step they're taking is anti-Christ. It is against the Creator and His Son and what He did. Whether you believe that or not, look around, things that I'm showing. And I'm going to leave you with a clip, because when we get through to the next agenda, when we get through to the digital money, the digital vaccine, the next is transhumanism. They are pushing, there's transgender, which is a confusion in the temple of God. You better figure out what the enemy is really after. The attack on the temple of God. Everything that I am showing over the years, it is attacking humanity. The food, the water, chemtrails in the sky, frequencies, tones, 5G, Morgellons, everything is an attack. Vaccines, depopulation. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is the next step is completely eliminating any sign of creation of humanity. What we're battling is not human. Principalities on high, Ephesians 6:12, our battle is not against flesh and blood. I'm going to leave you with this clip of propaganda that's pushing that agenda, and I'm going to leave it at that. It is the ultimate one game.
I just want you to know.
I want you, Mommy and Daddy.
I know you do, sweetheart. And we're going to ask you to take the filter off. Will you do that for me?
Think. I've been uncomfortable. Very long time.
We know.
I've been thinking ever since I was born that I don't belong in this body. Oh my God.
It's all right.
It's really okay, darling. I've been reading up on it. And I think I'm trans.
We've got lots of time to talk about this.
And if it turns out that we've got a lovely son instead of a lovely daughter, then we'll be happy.
No, I'm not transsexual.
Oh.
Is that not the word now?
But you said trans.
What did we call you then?
I'm not transsexual. I'm transhuman.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, they keep changing the words. I don't know the difference.
I don't want to change sex.
No, sure. We say gender now, don't we? Sorry.
I said I'm not comfortable with my body, so I want to get rid of it. This thing. All the arms and legs and every single bit of it. I don't want to be flesh. I'm really sorry, but I'm going to escape this thing and become digital.
What do you mean?
They say one day, soon, they'll have clinics in Switzerland where you can go and you'll sign a form and they'll take your brain and download it into the cloud.
And your body?
Recycled. Into the earth.
So you want to kill yourself?
I want to live forever. As information, because that's what transhumans are, Mom. Not male or female. Better. Where I'm going, there's no life or death, there's only data. I will be data. I'm a way too late. I've got something to say, can you hear?